Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Human Technology Podcast. You will be more than aware that we are living in a more and more digital world. Digitalization is one of the biggest megatrends we have, that we see at the moment. No political speech, no discussion on TV on the future of society, of technology, without digitalization, without connectivity, without making us as humans, making our activities, whatever we do, part of the digital world. And I have been aware of the expression, the Internet of Things, so that you connect everything you can to the Internet. Everything that is somehow existing gets a plug or gets a connection, gets a Wi-Fi connection, and then you have the Internet protocol as a common standard, and then all kinds of data exchange and services and information suddenly gets possible. Now, lately you heard the expression Internet of Buddies, not Internet of Things, but Internet of Buddies, meaning that in the next step, the human body, our bodies, will be part of the Internet of Things. And we are already starting that with all these wristbands, fitness wristbands, with the smart watches that we have, with the smart glasses. So we are having all these digital devices on our bodies, on the skin. And the next step then will be that some kind of digital electronics, maybe pills that you swallow that measure things, measure data inside your body, or that you get nanobots into your body that repair parts that are not okay, or distribute medication, drugs in exactly the locations where it has most value. So all this is the next steps that we have. And this is digitalization. There is no real definition of what digitalization is. And I thought a while about it and found out that maybe it's not really required to have a definition of it, because we will digitalize everything that can be digitalized. So it will be a complete digital world. And many of the big gurus of the future guys, they said, yeah, this is the death of the analog. Everything that is somewhere analog will be dead in the future, and because everything will be digitalized. And this is something that I cannot really follow. First thing is that we as humans, we are analog beings. We are living an analog life. Our senses, the way we see the world we touch it, the way we manipulate it, that is all digital. It's all analog. There's nothing digital. We have connectivities, connections to the digital world with our keyboards, so we see information on screens. And at the moment, I'm talking my analog voice into a microphone, and that is connected to my laptop computer. And this laptop computer turns it right into digital data. And after recording it, I will post-produce it, I will put in the intro and the outro, and I will mix it, and then I will publish it in a digital way. And then it's transported through the internet as bits and bytes in a digital way, and then it comes down to your device. Maybe you're listening on a smartphone, or maybe you're listening on your home stereo on this one, and then the loudspeaker turns this information back into analog, this digital information back into analog information, because we humans are analog. And so this is one thing why I believe that the analog will never be really dead. And the second thing is, and this is what I would like to talk about today, is every trend has a counter trend. There is a book called The Revenge of the Analog, which I can choose as a title for this one as well. And the alternative is that you use, or that I use, the word The Revival of the Analog, which is not as strong and not as nasty as The Revenge of the Analog. But it says, we have this counter trend. We humans are analog beings, and so we have a certain evolutionary genetical state where we believe, where we know, where we experience, where we experience that the analog is fitting us very well. Or as Douglas Copeland, an artist, author, journalist, said, I miss my pre-internet brain. Lately he said, he turned it into, I can't remember my pre-internet brain. With the digital, we are losing a lot of sensuality. We are losing the use of all of our senses, the complete cognition, the complete communication with humans and objects. So for example, if I do some online shopping and I want to get me let's say a new purse, in a shop, I can touch it, I can feel it. Hey, yes, the leather of this thing is feeling very nice, or it's very well done, and I can smell it. I can say, yes, this is a nice thing. Maybe there is a piece of metal. So I have a tiny little credit card purse with some leather wrapping around it. And I really love the combination of these two materials. And I cannot feel this when I'm buying online, when I'm doing digital shopping, when I go to one of the big shopping malls or big shopping providers on the internet. And yeah, I cannot really get a full impression of something. Or if I want to buy me a new perfume, I mean, if I buy my traditional one, the one I'm using since it's more than 15, almost 20 years now, I can order it online, no problem. It's a digital thing that I'm doing there. But if I want to get a new one, I need to smell it. I need to find out, hey, I will not only rely on the descriptions that I may find on some website. So I need the analog experience. And based on these introductory thoughts, I want to talk about three different things connected to the revenge or the revival of the analog. First, I want to list seven examples of things, of situations, of products, of services, where we can see that the analog is not dead. Second is digital detox. I will touch that only shortly. It belongs into this one. It belongs to a podcast on the revenge of the analog. My feeling is that this requires a separate episode only on digital detox that will be online, that I will record in the next weeks. And then finally, as always, I will have a quick look at the automotive industry. How is that influenced by the revenge of the analog, or how does the revival of the analog change our views and our use of cars? little spoiler, maybe it's not a revival or not a revenge. Maybe we are super analog in cars, but I will get back to that in a few minutes. Let's start with these seven examples that I was talking about the revival of the analog. First one is vinyl records versus CD. If you listen to music, people listen to music, they usually use some streaming service that is fully digital. Some musicians recording and then they're putting that onto the platform providers, and then it's distributed in a digital way, and yeah, you can listen to that. So that is the vast majority. But let's stick to physical devices, to objects that carry music on them. And there are vinyl records, these big black records that we know, and the CD, the compact disc, the little silver discs that you have. In 2023, 41 million vinyl records, long player records, were sold, opposed to just 33 million compact discs. And this, it was a few years ago, three, four, 5 years ago, when for the first time there were more vinyl records sold than CDs. And I have the figures for 2023, 41 versus 33 million devices. I got my first vinyl record when I was 10. It was in the mid-70s. And I loved that. I really loved these big records. And I love to go to record shops. So I spent most of the money I had at that time into music, buying music, and bringing that home. I mean, carrying in a paper bag or in a plastic bag two or three new albums I've just purchased. That was a good, positive, great feeling. When 10 years later, in the mid-80s, I switched from vinyl to CD, more practical, easier to handle, crisper, clearer sound. So I really like that. It was possible to play them in cars. So I switched to CDs at that time, and I'm not very happy about this, but I sold my vinyl records a few years later, all of them, and so I don't have anyone. But you have this feeling of owning something. You have this pride of when you buy something, and this is both true for vinyl records, but also for compact discs. The advantage of a vinyl is it's bigger. You have these cover art. And I had the feeling in the mid-80s that there is a lot lost when you have these smaller covers of a compact disc. And the if you go to streaming, yeah, that's even smaller. You only have icons on your smartphone. And so, yeah, that got even smaller. There are more and more vinyl record stores out there. And to my own surprise, I read a statistics that the audience in these stores is comparably young. Very often they are younger than their mid-20s. Feeling that my parents listen to digital music, that is boring old stuff. I want to have the real thing. I want to have vinyl records. And it is a comparably female audience. Buying vinyl records and going to these record shops, that was a pretty male thing when I was young, when I was a teenager in the late 70s. And it seems like more and more women, more and more girls are into vinyl records. And one final anecdote on this one. A few weeks ago, I was in a bar. It was a hotel bar. And there they had one of these high-end, super expensive vinyl records players and a great selection of records. And we were allowed, as the visitors of this bar, to put on records, to select records and to play the music there. And for me, this was the first time after, I don't know, 20, 25, 30 years that I was flipping through a set of the new records and pulling out this record out of its sleeve, putting it on the turntable, and then taking the arm with a pickup and putting that onto the record. Then this little click appeared, and then a little drizzling noise, and then the music started playing. And that was totally fascinating to me. That really grabbed me. And since then, I am thinking about getting me a record player and a couple of very well selected and very well recorded records, just to have this feeling again and to be back into the vinyl records. So that was the first example on the revenge or the revival of the analog with the vinyl records versus CDs. Another thing, writing on paper. There is a company called Moleskine. They are producing 20 million notebooks, paper notebooks per year, which is, I find it a pretty significant number. And I have them, I use them. I use them, most of them, most of the notebooks, the paper notebooks I'm using are from this company called Moleskine. And they have hundreds of shops worldwide, wherever I am. I see one and I get me one of them as a souvenir. And that compared with a prediction that we will have a paperless office. And this paperless office was coming tomorrow already 15 years ago. And when I look around here on my desk, there's still quite an amount of paper here. It's not as much as I had when I was at university during my PhD times. Then my desk had something like, I don't know, 10-inch high staples of paper. That is not the case anymore. But there is still a serious amount of paper around me. I have a printer beside me. So we are not where the paperless office is. And using these paper notebooks and using a well-designed, well-selected ball pen to write, that is for me an activity and an art that I'm performing and that I like to do. And when everybody takes notes into a smartphone, and I pull out my paper notebook and my pen, my ball pen, then I have a differentiation, a differentiator. I'm different from the rest, and you are not part of this. So, plus the fact I'm so old that I learned writing with a pen on paper. Studies show that people who did it, they are learning more when they write with their hands. So you transfer when you write with your hand the information right into your brain, and it is sticking there much better compared to writing something down with a keyboard or on a touch screen. So at the end of the day, yes, writing on paper is not dead. Paper is not dead. Again, an example that we have an analog environment. Number three, taking photographies on film. You may know the company Polaroid. They were very popular in the 70s and 80s. They had pretty bulky cameras. And it was just like an instant picture. So the normal way of that time make taking pictures was you had a roll of film, you put that into a camera, you took pictures, usually the maximum number was 36. Then you pulled out the film, brought it to a photography store or to a pharmacy, to a drugstore, and they developed that, and then 3 days later you received a package with your pictures in it. That was the standard, and Polaroid turned this into an instant experience. They had some like cassette in it as a storage of empty pictures. Empty, yeah, it was a picture without anything on it. And then if you took a photo, the picture, the outside world, was projected onto that piece of paper, or was a layer of chemical products, foils. Many layers of that. It was projected onto that, and then 5 minutes later, you had a developed picture at hand. So that was something like the very early version of a selfie that you make, or a picture you make, and that you share in, let's say, a WhatsApp group or in some on social media. So that was a very early version of that. And Polaroid was dead for many, many years. And 2, 3, 4 years ago, when I was at the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, my usual early year trip in January to Las Vegas. And I was totally surprised when I saw a booth of Polaroid. They had a camera there and they took a picture of me and they printed that. Or it's more like a printing process today. It's not so much the chemical development process as it was in the 70s and 80s of the 20th century. And they gave me that picture. And I took that picture and I carried it around in my wallet for a couple of weeks. Yeah, always saying, hey, cool, that's looking good. So again, an example of the analog. Another one in that area are so-called Lomo cameras. Lomo was a company from Russia. Very cheap cameras, very bad cameras. The pictures were distorted. They had reflexes on this. They were too dark or too bright. But it was a piece of art photographing with them. And then in 1991, some guys from Austria bought the rights of Lomo and the technologies of Lomo and commercialized that. And they still, until today, they make about $20 million revenue per year with these cameras, the analog, very cheap cameras, films, and Polaroid-style instant cameras. So they have this and they're active in that business. And this again shows that analog photos still have a certain amount of attractivity for users. Number four, Fender guitars. You may know the name Fender guitars. I mean, all musicians know this name. It's one of the two big American guitar and musical instrument amplifier companies. One is Fender, the other one is Gibson. And most music fans know that. So Fender is a classic guitar maker. They started in the early mid 50s of the 20th century, and they're still active and are still selling guitars. During the lockdowns and the corona pandemics, Fender had a peak of sales in guitars and amplifiers. And that was because people thought, okay, once I'm locked in at home and I can't go out, I want to make some music. Why not making some music? And of course, they could have taken their laptop computers or any kind of computer and made music with that. So I'm recording this podcast with a software called GarageBand, which is on Apple MacBooks. And you can make music with that. First of all, it's made to make music, and you can take little sound clips and very short of them and turn them into songs and arrange them. And you can do this in a fully digital way. And everybody could have done this, and it was a very cheap and direct and easy way of making music. But the people in the pandemic had a feeling, I want to have a piece of wood with a couple of wires on that and a little box with an amplifier and a loudspeaker in it. And that is what I want to have to make some music or at least some noise. So again, the analog way was beating the digital way of making music or at least playing a significant role in the entire game. Games. In Germany, these on-table games, the analog games, are very popular. So the revenue, the annual revenue of these analog games is about 700 million. So with cards or like Monopoly. I'm talking about this kind of game. So the German industry is making 700 million euros with that per year. And it doubled since 2005. So there is a serious amount of people saying, okay, I want to play something not with a computer, in a computer, or through a computer. I want to sit at a table with other humans. I want to play with something that I can touch, that I can feel, that I can move around. And we can do here on a table and in a very analog way. Number six of the examples of the revenge of the analog, we all know Zoom fatigue, how it is called. And Zoom is one of these online communication tools, video conferencing tools. There are others like Teams, like you name them. And we had them during the pandemic and afterwards, and people working from home, they highly appreciate that and they're very good, but it's a digital, it's a non-complete way of interaction. And we feel that sitting face to face with someone has a different quality. And home office is taken down more and more. So we all had home office. Whoever could work from home worked from home during the lockdowns and the pandemic. And those, many of them are returning either because they want to or because they have to. Many companies say, hey, you have to be at your desk at least 3 days per week. Or some even go back to, you have to be there all the time. There are a couple of reasons for that. But one is that we as humans are analog beings and we like to communicate in the direct analog way with others. This digital communication in between allows a lot, but it also hinders a lot. And so with that in mind, we see a return of the office opposed to the home office that we had for many, many, many months. Final example. Booths is a chain of supermarkets in England, first of all in Northern England, and they're comparably expensive. They're high value supermarkets, and they switch to self-checkouts, to digital checkouts in most of their shops. They found out that the personal contact in a shop is super important for many of their customers, particularly elderly, people living alone. For them, it was the only opportunity they had during the day to talk to someone, to interact with a real human. And so they returned to a personalized checkout. No self-checkout, but there is somebody behind the counter checking you out, having a little chat with you, talking with you, and giving you this positive feeling. So it was super important for them. And this is why booths returned. They abolished most of the self-checkouts and said, no, we want to have humans behind the counter that use the cashier machine. So those were the examples I wanted to talk about that did show that the analog is alive. Maybe it has never been anyhow really gone. And we should think when we design technology, when we design services, is there a component that we can put into to make it more analog and with that more human? And connected to that is digital detox. So smartphones, internet, PCs, they're all addictive. So the WHO, the World Health Organization, sees internet addiction, PC addiction, smartphone addiction as a serious disease. In South Korea, they're having military-style boot camps where young people, usually it's young men, are treated for their smartphone addiction. They try to get rid there with very radical methods, very radical trainings to get rid of the smartphone disease. And many of us have this personal feeling, and this feeling deep inside them, this gut feeling, oh, I should change something. Maybe I'm hanging around too much with my smartphone, and maybe I've done so much nonsense on the internet today. Maybe I should stop this. And if you go to the big bookstore, online bookstore, and you type in digital detox, you will find tons of books there on exactly this one, on how to get rid of this. And amongst them, at least in Germany, you will find my own book called Status Offline. So if you speak German and you haven't got a copy, you should think about getting one. And I'm also talking there about how to balance it, how to balance the advantages, all this and the sexiness, all this beauty of digital communication and digital interaction with the analog, the real life, and how to get benefits out of all the algorithms and the social media and the communication without selling your time, your focus, your attention, and your entire soul to big tech in Silicon Valley. And humans understand more and more that real communication is hard in digital worlds. And it's not only the communication between humans, but it's also the communication with an object. As I said, if I want to buy something, I want to have a full set of senses to understand the object and find out, is this something that I would like to have or not? So algorithms have this huge fascinations, but we learn more and more that this is not all that we have. And as I said earlier, there will be a separate episode in a foreseeable time frame on digital detox. Finally, in the last part of this episode, let's move on to the automotive world. If you look at commercials of cars, of automotive products, it's always about joy, it's about fun, it's about displaying yourself in public. I'm a Harley rider and I really love to sit on my machine and tell the rest of the world who I am and where I stand and what I do. So this is a very analog and a very, very personal thing. You see all these motorbikes, the old timers, the young timers. I'm reading a couple of magazines on old timers and young timers, and we have this Mazda Miata, which is a sheer, pure car. This is a pure driving experience you have without any digital layer on it. And yeah, this is the dream, and this is the optimum, and this is the positive side of automotive world. Driving itself, on the other side, driving itself is a very rational, very disconnected activity that you do. So in the future, today, partially in the future, even more, if you have a look at the plans, the human will be part of a remote-steered mobility system. You'll be an object that is transported by some anonymous mechanism through the world, which is totally different from what commercials is telling us and what many of us want to have while in the car. Until the mid to late 90s of the 20th century, the car was the last island of non-connectivity. So if you wanted to be totally disconnected, you got into your car, you were driving a bit, and then nobody could reach you, nobody could approach you. It was your capsule of disconnectivity that you had. Today, it is totally opposite. We are fully connected. We have all communication opportunities. If we are not driving, we can work, we can shop, we can communicate, we can do all these things. Electric driving, also something that disconnects us from the driving activities. And most of my clients, particularly those that work on high-end, high-value cars, electric cars, they think about how can we get emotions back to it? How can we get a full experience? How can we be less digital and more analog in what we do with sound, with vibrations? Yeah, without all this, these cars, these electric cars are totally sterile, non-attractive. One of my clients, he hired high-end sound designers just to design the sound that the car makes when you accelerate and when you brake, and how to what kind of vibrations to put in through the seat. Yeah, so one example is the Pininfarina Battista, which is a high-end, very, very small number of cars available, 1,000 horsepower electric sports car. They put enormous amounts of effort into it to give this analog traditional car feeling. If you have a look at automated driving, yeah, the human is not driving anymore. The human is driven by a rolling robot. So self-driving, the human is driving by itself and is driving with a combustion engine. That in the future will be what horses are today. Horses were until the early 20th century the main means of transportation, and today they are an expensive hobby, which you can perform in some very limited areas and limited conditions. That will be the same for cars you can drive with a combustion engine. You will put them maybe onto a trailer and you will drive to a racetrack with your car and trailer, and then you drive around there a couple of rounds. You pay enormous amounts of money for that, and then it's a hobby. On Automotive HMIs, the last episode was on the differences between touchscreens and haptic interaction. I had a very deep look into that, so I'll not get deeper into it, but that is exactly the same thing. So this touchscreen, the glass surface interaction, is a very digitalized interaction. It's non-analog, it's non-natural, and with the return of buttons onto dashboards, we see that, again, the revenge of the analog, or the revival of the analog, is there. And in cars, there's the question, will the analog ever go away, or is driving such an analog activity anyway? We are moving our analog bodies through an analog, non-digital world. We are moving masses. So is that something where the analog is inherent anyway, so that it is there? Or do we see more digitalization first and then the return? So, to be very honest, I don't have a clear answer on this one. The future is uncertain. But, we will see things of the revenge of the analog. So, interiors, for example, high-end materials, leather and wood, and the interactions, how will they be? That is something where there's open space for our fantasy, for our activities, and for whatever we want to do to make technology sexy. All right, little summary. So the revival of the analog, the revenge analog, is real. It is there. I've shown you 7 examples on this one, from vinyl and CD records through photos, pictures, down to supermarkets, where you see that analog is there. The fully digitalized world seems to be attractive, but many feel that the real is missing, the analog is missing. So we see a tendency towards digital detox. And we see in the automotive area a strong trend towards digitalization. My feeling is it will not be complete. It will not go too much further. We have reached the lowest level of analog designs. How do you say that? Analogs. So there will not be a real revenge of the analog in the automotive industry, but more like a revival or a keep it alive. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.